From Directions Magazine, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, May 20th, 2014. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Washington, D.C., at the Location Intelligence Summit.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief, also in Washington, D.C.
We have some geospatial mysteries to explore. Why did Trimble acquire WeoGeo? Why is Strava selling its users' data to organizations interested in infrastructure for cycling? We'll play detective after a word from our sponsor.
Map out your future in one of the top three high-growth industries. With a master's degree in applied geospatial sciences from Elmhurst College, you'll be an expert in spatial thinking and geographic information systems. And you'll have the tools that will make you indispensable in the industry. The degree is completed entirely online in cohort-based classes, so it's perfect for working professionals. For more information, visit go.elmhurst.edu/spsmags.
So let's start out with the WeoGeo story. Directions Magazine broke the story on May 6th that Trimble, in fact, had acquired WeoGeo. The company really didn't say much, but a week later, WeoGeo founder and CEO Paul Bissett offered a statement, part of which follows. WeoGeo has developed the world's most effective platform for geospatial data discovery and distribution. Trimble makes technology that collects the world's most precise geospatial data and converts these data sets into solutions for surveying, mapping, engineering, construction, agriculture, transportation, energy, and utilities. And most of us know WeoGeo because of its marketplace, where vendors could offer up their data and users could find the data they needed in the format they needed and purchase it. And in fact, WeoGeo had a deal with Pitney Bowes to connect up that data sales platform with MapInfo, and that never quite got off the ground. That was the Geosk product. The other piece of news that I dug up was that, in fact, a acquisition advisor company called MergerTech had actually helped enable this acquisition, and it's the same company, MergerTech, that helped GeoLoci become acquired by ESRI. So with all that as background, how do you understand this acquisition, and what do you think is going to happen?
Well, it's a bit of a head-scratcher. It didn't work for Pitney Bowes. I'm not certain it's got many more ways to go with Trimble. The only way I could think of it was, if you look at Trimble, if you look at the acquisitions they've made, they are infrastructure. They, almost all of the industries that they acquire are hard infrastructure applications, surveying, building, design, civil engineering, you name it. That's what they do. And what occurred to me when I did a kind of a review of this was, should it not also control the digital infrastructure as well, and geospatial data being a very big part of that? And so that was my take on why the acquisition made sense to them. This is going to be second time around for WeoGeo to try to make this work. Maybe Trimble has a different, entirely different tack on this, and they want to control this part of the geospatial workflow that Pitney Bowes could not control. And maybe that's what their play is.
Yeah, I think this goes back to many, many years ago when at our location intelligence conference, and actually before that, Tim O'Reilly had made statements about the nature of the new web and that one of the ways to get ahead was to own all the data. Mm-hmm. And if you couldn't own all the data, you should organize all the data, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he said. And he was he's a really smart guy. And so everybody wants to be what? Everybody wants to be the iTunes of something, right? Because iTunes licenses, makes those relationships with all the people who make all the music, and then they sell it. And guess what? They make a pile of money. Apple does.
Yeah. Okay. And that was the original approach, right? That was the approach to Geosk.
Right. And that was a vision, I think, that WeoGeo had for the technology that it was building, ultimately. Now, let's be realistic. Being the marketplace for one thing is really, really hard. It costs a lot of money. It means an awful lot of relationships. It means you've got to get the technology right as well, and you've got to get the pricing right. So even though we think of iTunes as the place, Google's competing, Amazon's competing. There's a bunch of people in that space now, but they're all big.
Yeah. Well, and the licensing issue is a huge part of that whole infrastructure. if we look at what has been tried to be done from the government side, the government's made many attempts, geoportal.gov being the latest. As you said, it is extremely hard. It's not that it isn't needed. If somebody said to you today, go out and find soil data for northern North Dakota, where would you go to look?
Google.
Okay, there's your first starting point. But you wouldn't be able to buy the data there.
I may not even be able to find the data. But that's where I just
start. That's where you'd look.
Because there isn't a place that I would start, whereas if you told me to go buy the latest song by your favorite artist, I knew I could go to iTunes and find it.
iTunes, yeah. But in truth, what should have geoportal.gov been? That should be the place. If you're take the example, I'm a GIS analyst. I want data for soil data for North Dakota. I should be able to go to the government. I should be able to find that one place in the government where I know I'm going to find at least several references to soil data. Now, I don't think this is the kind of place that you're going to find all of the world's data. And if that is the vision, you got to pour an awful lot of money into marketing that as such.
Right. If it's going to be a commercial entity, right, and the government has already put a whole lot of money into trying to make publicly available data available and findable, and find that little bit that you're interested and clip, zip, and ship in the format, in the projection. This is a whole lot more complicated than delivering an MP3 of a song.
Yeah, and I've never heard Google articulate the fact that they want to be the place for geospatial data. Yeah, they want to organize the world's data, but I can't go to Google Earth and download the soils data for North Dakota.
Well, you can sort of do some of it kind of, sort of, with the gallery and...
Well, the visualize it. You can visualize it.
And there's some tools now where you can get to the U.S. topo data, but it's not this giant catalog of all the data.
Right.
So I think what we're really saying is WeirdGeo certainly had a great idea. They seem to have... they're very far ahead of their time, using Amazon Web Services, trying to put together not only the GIS part of this, but the back-end business part of this. They certainly gave it a go, and hopefully it will have a new life within Trimble.
They're going to have to position it in a certain way to their customer base first. That would be my thought.
Right, which is a much more focused infrastructure kind of – it's a different marketplace. I think that's true. The other mystery I wanted to dig into a little bit this week has to do with a company called Strava. And Strava came onto the scene in 2010. And it's a tool for managing and capturing information for athletes. It's very widely used by cyclists. Their first iPhone app came out in 2011. And this wasn't just a track where I go and how fast I go. It was really about comparing yourself to what other people have done on that same route. Did you do it faster than other people? Those kind of things. So it sort of got the competitive juices flowing for people who are into that kind of thing. And it's very widely used. It comes up a lot in conversation. I have to say that my friends who are not competitive cyclists but more recreational cyclists don't use it at all. But plenty of people do, and that has brought us forth to earlier in May when Strava announced a new service called Strava Metro. And what is it? It's a new service that allows insight and analysis of bicycling routes and commute patterns around the world. The service empowers advocacy organizations and government agencies to understand cycling activity in local communities and make better informed decisions when planning, maintaining, and upgrading bicycling infrastructure. And the press release goes on to say that it basically uses the activity information from members worldwide. The data is anonymized, it's aggregated to protect privacy, and it brings the data into this digital form. They make data available in heat maps to pretty much the general public and advocacy organizations for free. But if you want the raw data, you can license this Strava Metro data set for use in your GIS. And the pricing is based on the number of members in the geographic area. And the one data point that we have is out of the Oregon Department of Transportation. They began their relationship with Strava last year, and their data was delivered for 17,000 cyclists, and they paid $20,000 for it. And they're certainly the first DOT user of it, and it sounds like they're among the first users of it in general. So what was your response when you heard about this new offering from Strava?
Well, I think it's a tremendous idea, and the ability to use it in local government urban planning, I think, is tremendous. And I really applaud Strava for doing this, for making this available, though they're certainly monetizing it and giving the urban planners a great vehicle for planning. I had never heard of Strava. I don't know if you use it. I've used Map My Run, and I know about Map My Ride. But I was not familiar with this application. I immediately, when you brought this to my attention, I passed it to our GIS manager in the city, because we're in the middle of a huge city planning within the city of Huntsville, and I sit on one of the economic development organizations. So I immediately passed it to the GIS manager, because they're right in the middle of doing planning for recreation areas, expanding bike paths. And so I hope more cities use it.
The whole idea of capturing cycling data is just hard. We don't have the sensors in the roads like we do for cars. You know, we can't evaluate how the pavement is being destroyed because of the cars, because bikes have such a lower impact. And what they do is you can either have, I think there are automated counters, and then I know here in Somerville we have volunteers who go out and sit at an intersection and count the bikes as they go by.
Wow, how about that?
So that's sort of the old-fashioned way of doing this. And the new-fashioned way, of course, is to capture the data from the GPS devices or the phones of the people who are using whatever technology they're using. The problem, of course, is that plenty of people don't use any technology. Some people use some technology. Some people use other technology. The Strava population, as I suggested, tends to be more competitive. They tend to use the application more when they're doing training rides to see if they're going fast enough or faster than their buddy or whatever. So it may be that it's not exactly a representative sample, and the Oregon Department of Transportation folks have readily admitted that. And they did an interesting study where they got their counts of cycles, of bicycles, and they compared it to the population, the data that they got from Strava, and the Strava users was 2.5% of the number of people who passed by on bicycles seemed to be represented in the Strava data. It's a start.
I didn't discount that notion of that being that the mainly the competitive riders that use Strava. I think that they, like you said, they needed some data to start with, and they needed to aggregate the data to understand even where the majority of these competitive cycles go, because that will tend to attract other cyclists of a not so competitive nature. So they would at least get some idea of the major routes that bikers could use. While I understand that it's a very small sampling, I think it's a place to start to get a good handle.
Well, I think that's why people are so excited about it. It's a data set. It's been collected. I mean, it's very clear if you read the privacy policy from Strava that they say we're gonna capture your data. We're able to compare you to other people, and we can use it for other purposes. The people who are being creeped out about it, not surprisingly, didn't read the agreement that said how this was going to work. And of course, there is a free version of Strava, so if the product is free, then you're the product. If you're not used to that yet, then you got to get on board.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think the real challenge here is, how do you, as an advocacy organization or a city, how do you get more people to participate so your data is better?
So I would think, hopefully, that Oregon DOT or City of Portland would try to at least promote what they're doing, enlighten people as to what the data is that they're collecting. And you can see down the road other types of data like this, right? People who walk, people who run. If you're looking to expand the bike paths or the walkways or places where people can walk safely, you know, maybe you're going to start to correlate this with crime and other places to let people know where to go to walk and bike and run. I think I can see other applications for cities to use this in planning.
And actually, the best article that I found about this was from Bike Portland, and mm-hmm. went into some detail, some of which I've already shared. And the comments were fascinating, because some of them were just this frank. Hey, you know, I don't use Strava, but if the data is going to be captured and go back to the city, I might start using it.
Yeah, right.
Right?
I think it's,
which,
perfect.
Which, it makes a lot of sense. And there's this tension here, of course, because this is a for-profit company, and maybe people feel that it should be done either through the city, and some of the cities do have these apps that they make available, and you're supposed to turn it on when you start your bike ride, and then you've turn it off when you're done. That kind of change in habit is tough to go for. But again, if people are motivated, this may just work. So I'm disappointed about all discussions about it being creepy, because come on, it's 2014. This is not creepy. This is a smart company working with big data, putting together a product that clearly cities and organizations want.
And I applaud the Oregon DOT for recognizing that this type of data could be of real value to them. So I think they deserve a lot of kudos as well.
Yeah, well, it sort of helped that one of the people was a competitive cyclist
was
out,
yeah,
on a ride with some people who knew the right people, and it's a great little story. Well, that's all the time we have for today.
Our sponsor, Elmhurst College, would like to remind you that with a master's degree in applied geospatial sciences from Elmhurst, you can map out your future. At Elmhurst, you'll work with experienced educators and professionals, and you can complete the program in just 2 years. And Elmhurst has a dedicated GIS server, so you get hands-on experience. To learn more, visit go.elmhurst.edu/spsmags.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can reach us at editors@directionsmag.com. You can send us a tweet @directionsmag, or you can leave a comment where this podcast is posted @directionsmagazine. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.